Hey there, Mark Edwards here with Jerome Rube and Brad Allen. How you doing, guys?
Well, doing great.
That's good. Well, first of all, how are you guys? Jerome, I haven't talked to you since this morning, and Brad, I haven't talked to you in 4 or 5 days, actually. What have you guys been up to, Jerome?
Obviously, working on the Black Book, but also like taking some watching some Netflix, watch Ozark season 2 and 3 back to back. So getting my Netflix watch on, and also pretty much that's the only thing I've watched on Netflix so far since the season got canceled. So pretty busy with hockey as well. So try to combine Netflix and hockey.
Brad, what have you been up to?
Pretty similar situation, there's, for us the season's certainly not over by any stretch. I mean, we're writing for the Black Book, we're watching as much as we can. So I've been doing a lot of goalie scouting and getting to scout everything, but show wise haven't touched Netflix yet. But I'm a Westworld fan, and Westworld came back for season 3, so catching up in Westworld, that's been good. And just trying to get used to home workouts, which has been easier said than done. It's been tough, and weather here has been bad, so not able to get outside, so just trying to survive.
Yeah, I have not done a ton of TV watching either, other than some background noise. But I did watch Narcos Mexico, the latest season, which that's one of my favorite shows. And actually, Jerome, I just watched season 1 of Ozark, which was interesting. I guess I'll keep going on that. It's all right. I can see a lot of people hyping it up, so I dove into it. And then one other thing I'll just mention that we are doing for the listeners here is obviously we're watching video archives on our own. That's our only choice right now. But one thing we've actually done is use Zoom, and the three of us have actually watched a little bit of prospect video at the same time through Zoom. So I share the screen, and the three of us kind of just talk about what we're seeing as the game's going on. It takes a little bit of the staleness out of just watching video constantly by yourself, and the three of us can chat a little bit as we watch. And so we've been doing a little bit of that. A little bit different week ahead of us than we were planning on. We were planning on being Plymouth for the U18 in a few days, which would have been fun. And I think we would have had Mike and Dusty were also going to pop in for a couple days each. So there would have been a lot of us there, and it's a shame, but obviously, we got to get through this, and everybody's doing their part. So, with that said, I have also kept up with my chats with some NHL guys, seeing what they're up to. A lot of them noticed over the last 10 days ago or something around that, they're getting a little more stir crazy. And, it's tough being at home, especially when you're used to being out as much as scouts are, not just at home, but even in your own province at times, obviously, going from flying and being in the car so much to stuck in a home office is probably a pretty good adjustment. It was interesting. My last game was March 11th in Guelph, and there was a ton of scouts there that night. And I think one of the reasons was scouts were starting to get grounded. So, one scout in particular was saying he could only drive to the game and go home, no hotel. He couldn't cross the border, even to cross the border and go to Plymouth, for example, to see the program. So he was just literally wherever he could drive to and get home to that night. And everybody was comparing different stories and what we thought was going to happen. And we didn't even get through that game before the NBA player tested positive, and the game was shut down. And right then and there, we figured there might be some trouble. And the next day I was scheduled to go to Peterborough. Barry was going to be in town, I believe, and that game never happened. That was when everything got closed up. So we've been in video mode ever since. Anyway, with that said, we'll get to some questions that people have been submitting, and it's been a while since we've done this. So Dan asked us, it seems as though Jake Sanderson is a big second half riser this year. Is he a riser for you? Can you shed some light on why, if he is, and we got a few questions on Jake Sanderson. So, yes, he's a riser for us. Been a little bit of a topic of conversation. I was actually on Guy Flaming's podcast last week and talked about him. And the thing that was interesting is saw him early in the year and then saw him on New Year's Day. And then we released our rankings just before the All-American Prospect game, which he had a fantastic game. And he kept it up from that point on through to things getting shut down here. Just a lot more confidence, I think, with the puck on his tape and playing a more offensive style game, more poised, creating a little bit better. And I mentioned to Guy Flaming that, you know, for me at the start of the year, kind of reminding me of a style of play that we saw last year from Tobias Bjornfot, who's, you know, great shutdown, great skater, very, very few mistakes, and just a really solid decision maker, but not a ton of offense coming from him. Now, after watching Sanderson in the second half, kind of with this run he's done on, my comparable would be more like a Moritz Seider from last year with a little more offense mixed in the game, still able to shut down the other team's top line and play big minutes. So that's a pretty good change when it comes to rankings time. The conversation with scouts out there, team scouts, is much the same as we've had in-house here, just how he's kind of changed those little details of his game. So, you know, the improvement was not in all of a sudden he became a better skater. He's already probably a top three, top five skater in this draft. It wasn't anything like that. It was just kind of, you know, his mindset. And actually, Rachel Halliwell, our reporter, interviewed him a few weeks ago, and she asked him if he had made a conscious change, and he said that he had. So that was interesting to hear from him. As far as what scouts are saying, I know as many scouts who have Sanderson ranked over Drysdale as scouts that have Drysdale ranked over Sanderson. So it'll be interesting coming draft day. I don't know if one of you guys wants to throw in a comment. Brad, do you have anything you want to throw in here?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, this is a kid who's had a second half surge and done a pretty rare thing in hockey, which is flip a switch during the season. Usually with prospects, you see it in an off season, you see them come back and they look different, where with Jake, he did it as his season progressed, which is very interesting from a scouting perspective. I think for our listeners, if we were to try to summarize why Jake Sanderson is in that same tier as Jamie Drysdale, it's Jamie Drysdale is, you know, he has a bit more of flair to him, but in terms of the defensive side of the puck and the projectable skating, Jake has an advantage there. That's obviously not to say Jamie's not capable of skating. He's a tremendous skater as well. But Jake just has a bit of an advantage with his height skating and just the defensive acumen he has and the ability to move up the ice. It just, there's a full package there. With Jamie, there's maybe not as well-rounded a game as of now.
Yeah, I mentioned to a scout last week that I have Sanderson ranked over Drysdale. And for me, one of the reasons is because Sanderson, I think, can match up and play in a first pairing against another team's first line. And I'm not sure where Jamie is currently as far as defending. I'm not sure if I would be as confident that he can do the same thing and play the big, huge minutes against another team's line one. So we'll move on from Sanderson. We could probably talk a long time about him and what we've seen in the second half. But Barry from Windsor asked, how much do we look at player stats? Are they a big factor in our draft rankings? So this one's interesting because if you follow me on Twitter, I'll often talk about shots on goal, how poorly they're kept in junior and the OHL. I find it one of the worst. I'm not in the WHL as much to know if it's quite as bad, but I am in the Q quite a bit. And the Q is, in my opinion, a little bit better at keeping the shots on goal stats than the OHL. So we always kind of take the stats with a grain of salt. But with that said, yes, we have always looked into stats. And I included something that we do just about every year. We take a look at some stats, breaking down how the players do against kind of top teams and bottom teams. And Jerome is actually one that did it. So Jerome, you want to just talk about what you did here, and they're included or going to be included when I post this.
Yeah. So last few years I've done this with mostly just QMJHL players. So basically I split the league in two. So the bottom half teams and top half teams, and just see how many points they get against, for example, Alexis Lafreniere, how many points he gets against like top half team, and how many points he gets against bottom half team. In most cases, it doesn't tell a whole lot, but you know, sometimes you'll get some stats that like will jump at you. And you know, I remember last year Jacob Pelletier was one where I think he had 40% of his point against the top two worst team in the league. So it doesn't mean like we didn't like Pelletier. I'm a big fan of him, but just interesting stats to, as far as like projection goes. You know, a lot of people project Pelletier last year as an offensive player, and I didn't see it. And you know, those stats, you know, could give you an indication that maybe the point total at the end of the year is probably not realistic. And so you know, I did this year with the Q, obviously, OHL, WHL, USHL. So I split like every league in two category. And I mean, it will be a lot easier for a listener to just check on the website. All the data will be there. And just very, very interesting to do. Very long to do. OHL, WHL website, not like super useful as far as like finding those stats. The Q website, again, it's probably the best stats of any league for finding those stats. So a lot easier to do for Q players. So, but very interesting to do. And you'll note, if you check the NDDB guys, we just did USHL games for them. And so the Bordalo and Peterson, they didn't play a lot of games against top half team. So I don't know how exactly they do their schedule as far as facing USHL team, but they didn't play a ton of games against USHL teams this year. So obviously they play against the NCAA team, so that's a bit different, but very very interesting to see how some guys do against better team and also like weaker teams.
Yeah, just I won't go much more into this, but here where there's some theater, something we had in the queue, especially after some trades are made and we got the teams going for it, and other teams are just decimated. And we saw that this year with Niagara, but some of the teams were pretty weak all year long. Anyway, we'll move on to next question here from Peter. Some prospects people I follow are not as high on Askarov this year as they were last year. What do you think about his game this year? Brad, this one's going to be all yours.
Yeah, it's interesting because you know, last season, he couldn't have had a better season, really. As a 16-year-old goalie, it doesn't get much better than the season he had. And as a result, a lot of people are on board with where I was with him, which was I thought he was bordering on a generational talent. That hasn't changed for me. And the primary reason is that I think people are underestimating the circumstances he was in terms of reflecting on his performances. So, for instance, he plays in the VHL, which for our listeners is the equivalent of the Russian AHL. So it's a professional league. It's a good one. And he plays for SKA, which is St. Petersburg, and they are stacked. Okay, they're the top dog in Russia. They get all the big names. Development system is basically the equivalent of a Swedish system like Frölunda. Okay, so very, very high-end system. And what that does, though, is it puts him in a tough spot because the team is too good in front of him. What I mean by that is that the shot volumes are not very high. And I know that sounds like it's making an excuse for a goalie, but there is a thing for some goalies where they get better with volume. Okay, so for instance, I'm sure a lot of a lot of our listeners out there are fans of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Frederik Andersen is a great example of this. I got to follow Freddie 6 years before he even came to the Leafs. Okay, so I've seen him play tons, and he was always better with volume. He broke SHL records, and when he did it, it was with volume. And on Anaheim, volume. So you get an idea that volume really plays a factor in certain goalies being able to dial in and play well. And in Askarov's case, this is a very interesting stat, but I'm pretty sure over 80% of his wins in the VHL this season were with 30 or more shots. So you look at his shot volume when it was reduced below that, and he'd played poorly. And that's reflective of his stats. So if you want to just look at it from a purely stats perspective and a team-oriented perspective, it doesn't bode well for him to thrive because he is going to be a volume goalie. The other factor I'll bring into the equation here is that when you're looking at Askarov, what really separates him is now getting underplayed, and that's how he moves in the net. Everybody's talking about how he had a poor U20 performance. I don't remember the last time that we had to debate a 17-year-old having a poor U20 performance as a goalie. It doesn't happen. That speaks volumes to what his team thought of him coming into that tournament in terms of confidence. So to rely upon Askarov early speaks volumes to what they think of him as he was heading into that event. Then you look at him in the VHL. He broke records in the VHL. Everybody keeps arguing about his average season. He's the only goalie to ever do this. So I don't really agree with this whole, you know, he's bad in the VHL, he's bad in the U20s, it was an awful season. I don't agree with any of that. And then in terms of just actually his technical ability, there's very few players that ever move the way this kid does. Yeah, I keep making the comparison to UC Saros, and I'm going to keep using it because it's the right one. The way he moves is very, very distinct. He's capable of moving so fluidly from just, you know, a reverse VH into a standing position across the crease in one motion instantly. Like he can correct for off position. Like when he needs to reposition, he can correct for it quicker than almost any goalie I've seen. When he's dialed in, he can get in front of second and third shots quicker than almost any goalie I've seen. When he comes in and out of his butterfly, which we refer to as a transitional butterfly, it is incredibly high end. His reflexes are extremely impressive. I'm sure there's some other goalie experts or people who are into the position. One kid I've been high on for a long time is Elvis Merzlikins. His best quality is his ability to kick, his reflexive kicking. Askarov shares the same tendency. Extremely impressive movement and the ability to kick rapidly, which in a 6-3 frame, it just really, when he's on his game, he takes up so much of the net. And then he can recover on plays where, you know, something hits a shin, a puck hits a shin, or the play requires him to think quickly. He can get back into position. So you take that base, and then you put in a kid who on home soil last season out-dueled Spencer Knight on the best U.S. program we've ever seen, in the highest pressure-oriented game he's ever been in at a 16-year-old, and you see the amount of poise he's capable of having, and that's not just that game. I know I use that as an example, but there's several games where he's shown a tremendous amount of poise and confidence, and the hockey sense is there. There's, the whole package is there, and I'm really hoping that he gets an opportunity to develop correctly, because I think it's just going to be special for all of us to get to watch what he can develop into.
Brad, you think his glove hand would probably be the biggest weakness or something he has to work on?
Yeah, so in terms of the one area where it's like, okay, how high-end is it? It is the glove hand. In terms of where he's been beaten the most in our viewings, it has been high glove. And that's it's more like not how many times he's beaten, it's just how he looks when he is beaten on his glove, his high glove. For me, there's been a couple shots where he's a bit too delayed. Which is, it's a warning sign to a degree, but that said, when he's been on his game, it's been far less of a problem. And, even his catching rates have been, very consistent, and he is pretty good at using his glove in a downward motion most of the time. You know, it's not a bad glove hand would be the way to word it, because if it was, we would never be as high on him as we are. It's a good glove hand, but it is lagging behind the other aspects of his game, which are excellent.
Does it bug you that he wears it on the wrong hand? is practical.
I remember we've talked to the couple scouts. Are like, who catches right? Jonas Hiller caught right, and Jonas Hiller was a heck of a goalie. Unfortunately, vertigo really prevented him from having the career I think he could have had, because he was an all-star just before the vertigo took over on Jonas. And to be honest, I don't think he ever really looked the same to me after that. But it does show that a right catching glove goalie can have success, and that's obviously important when evaluating him long term.
All right, I'm gonna move right from that into the next question, and we've been asked this quite a bit. Any idea on when the Black Book will be available, and will it be released earlier this year? So the second part of that question, will it be released earlier, is easy to answer. No. It's going to take us just as long to do it as usual, so it won't come out earlier. That I can say for sure. As far as the availability, the date, right now trying to act like business as usual, and as if the draft is at the end of June. So just acting like that, even though I don't think that's going to be the case, we're just going to try and have it ready for when we would usually release it, which would be sometime around June 8th to 10th. The draft was scheduled to be a week later this year, so we were kind of planning on using an extra couple days to fine-tune it a little bit. Talking to scouts, there's just a whole lot of unknowns. Anywhere from the draft could be September, October to who knows, maybe midsummer if everything's canceled. So we're just acting like we always do, get this thing done in a regular time frame and then go from there. If the draft was, say, September, October, there's a chance we'll delay release a little bit and we can just maybe make it a little bit better this year. But other than that, we're just sitting here like everybody else, trying to wait and see if there's going to be any more hockey and when they're going to name the draft to actually happen. Next, we got questions from a few different people asking why we don't have Jeremy Poirier in our top 31. Poirier, real quick.
Well, I mean, obviously it's pretty easy to see defensive skills with him, but I think what has worried us all year, and even going back to last year, even for me, even in midget, is like his playing in his own end. He struggles a lot defensively, lose a lot of battles one-on-one, gets beat too often. So obviously there are all things he could improve. Also, we're not huge fan of the compete level in his own zone. So it's all those reasons equal him not being in our first round this year. And he's a pretty interesting player as far as like ranking goes. But I mean, there was never really any talk of him in our first round this year. So for us, it was, you know, not that hard to rank him.
Yeah, I saw him live quite a few times this year. I'll just quickly add that, you know, when he's skating north-south, it's fine. Where he struggled for me was people going wide on him with pivots and also just tracking guys one-on-one along walls. He got shaken pretty easily. So you talked about the compete, but I think it was a combo of the compete and just his agility when he was trying to stay with forwards one-on-one in his own zone. So we could go into talking about him for forever based on the amount of lengthy conversations we've had about him over the past 2 years. But we'll leave it at that. Brad, why don't you just give some quick tidbits on Grons?
Sure. You know, there's some overlap with Poirier in terms of offensive gifts. He can quarterback a power play for sure in terms of, you know, just he can get a shot through traffic. He's got a heavy shot. He can identify, you know, his teammates when he's looking to create using his playmaking ability. He's got, you know, a 6'3 right shot, which is pretty rare. That's for something that every scout looks for. If you're a 6'3 defenseman, you're a right shot. That's a good base. Unfortunately, as good as he can be in the offensive end,
he can be equally, if not worse, in the defensive end. There's a lot of work to be done with him. He's extremely raw off the puck. His gap is mismanaged quite often. He's very inconsistent in terms of assessing what forwards are doing when they come down on him in transitional play. His puck retrieval is inconsistent. His management of risk is very bad. That is, I'd argue, the biggest problem with him in the defensive end. And yes, you can clean up a kid's defensive structure to a degree, for sure. But it's, you know, as scouts, we have to look at every variable and just how many things they need to overcome in order for their offensive gifts to flourish. And in Helge's case, it's going to take a lot of work. He needs a lot of development to become the player that he theoretically could become to quarterback a power play at the NHL level.
Yeah, I'm going to leave it at that. And we've been going a little longer than I thought we would here just to cover all this. So I just want to thank everybody for continuing to support us with memberships through this unusual time as everything's shut down and we're all in at home riding this out. But it's much appreciated. And we'll try and keep everybody up to date with what our plans are. And we're still releasing interviews. I've been talking and interviewing the players on my own, and then Rachel Hallowell has been following up with a few of them and talking to a few others that I haven't even spoken to. We're getting those posted on the website. I know she plans to keep doing that, and we'll just keep trying to pump out some info here as we go forward and eventually find out when this draft is going to take place. So thanks, guys, and thanks everyone out there, and we'll try and do this again soon.